This year's donations might go to, say, the geology department.
Oh dear, not the dirt people.
Geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really.
What kind of activity is thermolytic acid?
Look, I'm just a geologist. I like rocks. I love rocks.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Peterson.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geology Flannelcast. My name is Steve.
Hey, everyone. I'm Chris.
Good evening. I am Jesse.
Is it evening? What if they're listening in the morning?
Good afternoon. Good morning, good afternoon, good night.
Good non-specific time. Hello. Oh, you just say hello.
There you go. Ahoy, ahoy.
I want to make it more personal, like I'm talking directly to them.
I like it. That good morning, good afternoon, good night. Is that from The Truman Show?
It is.
Yes, yeah.
Welcome to the Geology Flannelcast, everyone. This is already going off the rails, and we're, 53 seconds in. Hello.
Hello, yeah.
This is your first time listening. Welcome. Thanks for hanging out. If you've been here a bunch of times, welcome back. How's everyone doing today?
Yeah, excelente.
Hope everyone's holding up all right.
I am. You know, the Eagles lost again, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, can't win them all.
No, and I heard, I haven't seen it yet, but I heard Dak Prescott's ankle, blew up.
Yep, not great. If you're squeamish, do not watch that video.
No, I haven't. Megan came home, she said, apparently it was equated to Namath. I was like, yeah.
It was turned, it was at angles. They're holding it. It was,
Well, I wish him a speedy recovery.
Yeah.
Action-packed episode for today, everyone, so that makes it no different from any other episode we've ever had. But before we get started with the topic today, let's pay some bills.
Yeah,
Steve, take it. Tag, you're it.
Let's say thank you to our sponsor, The Formatting Formula. You can check them out at www.formattingformula.com for all of your Word document formatting needs. I guess is the proper way to say it. They can handle anything from table of contents to embedding figures to coming up with fancy personalized toolbars. But not only that, they also have YouTube channel. So it's YouTube.com/C/formatting formula where you can actually teach yourself how to do all this stuff. So if you ain't got time for that, then contact them, let them know the Geology Flannelcast sent you and they will hook you up. Seriously, they do stuff in minutes that would take me hours. It's amazing what they can get done with a Word document and how quickly they can get it done. And they're like, just do it. I don't know what they're talking about, but some of the more basic stuff I have actually watched their YouTube videos and learned myself. So if I can learn, then anybody can learn. So please check them out, formattingformula.com or YouTube.com/C/formattingformula, and let them know the Geology Flannelcast sent you. So they continue to be our sponsor.
If I could just criticize that commercial real fast.
Oh, sure. Why not?
If you ain't got time for that, let's talk about that phrase that came out of your mouth. You can take the boy out of Philly, but you can't take the Philly out of the boy.
That's a fairly common colloquialism, I would say. No?
Yeah.
I mean, I just figured you're referencing that YouTube video. I ain't got time for that.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so no.
All right, never mind then.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm probably thinking of some, 90s rap song or something. I don't know.
Anyways.
Yeah. Other than that, the commercial was perfect. So
very good.
Formatting Formula, please check them out. Look at this, getting all this extra airtime because Seminex critiquing my live commercial doing abilities.
It wasn't your commercial, it was just the grammar. Okay. All right. Well, it's kind of like a new little twist today that we're going to be doing. So it'll be like a hybrid. It's like a hybrid episode kind of. So it's not completely current events. It's not completely on, well, I guess it will be mostly on one topic. No, it's not only on one topic. We're going to be talking about some mountains today. Right. I guess that's the, the common theme, right, gentlemen?
Yeah, I like mountains. It. Mountains.
Mountains. Who doesn't like mountains?
Mountains.
Mountains.
When I save this file, I'm going to save it as mountains.
You should.
With like three M's. Mountains.
Big hills. Big hills.
Big hills. Mole hills.
Yeah. Making a mountain out of it. And that's the idea of this today's topics.
I love it.
We're going to take molehills and make them mountains.
Yeah. True. True story.
So I guess I'll start off. And so there's a news story I saw this week that we're going to be talking about here in the Flannel Cast about the Sierra Nevada Mountains. So in case you don't know what the Sierra Nevada Mountains are, or I guess if you just don't know what they are, if you're in a different country other than the United States, the Sierra Nevada Mountains are a mountain chain that runs in a north-south direction on the basically in western California.
First of all, you could live in this country and still not know where the Sierra Nevadas are.
That is true. You'd be surprised. Yeah.
I always get confused where they're at. I said it.
Wow. You, of all people.
Tell me about it.
So
we're now interviewing for a third host of the Geology Flannel Cast.
So one of the things is the so we'll kind of give like a brief little synopsis, little history on the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and then kind of get into this news story because it's kind of like I don't know, I think the formation of the Sierra Nevada Mountains is a pretty cool story, but you kind of have to know a little bit of the background info in order to get into this news story we're going to be talking about. So let's just a quick little, I don't know, like 5 minute or so synopsis of how the Sierra Nevada Mountains got formed. So the one thing,
do you know what Sierra Nevada translates as?
I do, but do you want to say it?
Oh, I hope I'm right now. I feel like you're the expert.
I'm not the expert on this.
Send all correspondence.
Yeah,
it's geologyflanelcast.com.
The land of good beer, right?
Yeah, I've always known it to be snowy beers. No, snowy mountains.
Yeah, that's it. Snowy mountains.
Nailed it. All right.
Nailed it. One of the first things I always think of is like the beautiful granite that makes up the Sierra Nevada Mountains. There's a couple of different national parks in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Most notable that mostly everyone's heard of is Yosemite National Park. That's located in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. And then a couple, Kings Canyon National Park and Sequoia National Park. So it's some beautiful, beautiful terrain. And these are younger mountains. And supposedly I believe they're still being uplifted today. So they're still growing in size, they're pretty big. So that they also have they have the largest mountain or the highest, I should say, the highest mountain in the contiguous United States in the lower 48. It's Mount Whitney that has an elevation of 14,505 feet.
Whoa!
So that's up there a ways. A lot of people think like, oh, the tallest mountain in the lower 48 is in Colorado or something. Nope, it's California, Mount Whitney.
Very cool. Have you ever been over 10,000 feet?
I have, yeah.
I have.
I have once.
Did you get a headache?
I was definitely like out of breath. Like I was hiking and I was like, wow, like you really can tell a difference.
Yeah,
I was
at 14 and I like jogged from one side of this ridge to the other and yeah, I was winded, but I'm terribly out of shape too. So
I always wonder though, how much of that is like placebo? You're like, oh, I'm at elevation. I should be tired right now because
No, I think it's a thing.
I think for some people, I don't know. It doesn't really affect me too much.
I did get a headache too, but again, I was hungover. So
I've gotten the headaches at like, if I spend, like when I've been out like climbing and hiking and stuff like that, if I'm over, it seems like 12,000 or so is the, because we all three of us live at sea level essentially. What is Philadelphia like, 200 feet above sea level?
At some of the high points, like South Philly's at like 30.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Atlanta's like 1,000 feet above sea level, so it's we're not dealing with elevation. But when I go out there and I'm in the mountains, if I'm over like 12,000 feet for like a couple like an hour or two, I start to get the headaches and stuff. Anyways, we're kind of digressing here, but elevation, who would have thought?
It's interesting.
So
it is.
So there are the majority of rock that makes up the Sierra Nevada mountains is this beautiful granite. It's like the perfect granite. Usually when you see it,
and you could take it for granite.
I hope you wouldn't take it for granite.
You should take it for granite because it is granite.
Exactly.
Could take it for granite and get away with that.
All right. Well, if you're still listening,
then. Yeah, Seminac, you need that cricket sound back.
So, okay. So mostly trying to move on with this here. All right. So there are some rocks in the Sierra Nevadas that are not granite. There's some metamorphic rock. And we're not going to, so for all intents and purposes, if you're there, listen, if you are like, you know, if you're really into the geology of the Sierra Nevada mountains and you're like, it's not all granite. Yes, I know. For the purpose of this podcast today, we're just going to be dealing with the granitic portion of the Sierra Nevadas, or rock that's very, very similar to granite, we should say. So the granites that make up the Sierra Nevada mountains, that started to form about 155 to 145 million years ago. And so what happened was there was a volcanic island arc. So we see, it's like, in case you don't know what a volcanic island arc is, it's kind of similar, or it's not kind of similar. It is what the Japanese islands are. It's a chain of islands. It's an arc type shape. And that's what that's why they call it an island arc system.
Forms from subduction.
Right, from subduction.
Yes, yes.
So the arc shape actually comes from the curvature of the Earth.
Is that where it comes from?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's funny. I never thought about that.
Yeah, so if you were to flatten out the planet, that line would be a pretty straight line.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Wow. All right, you learn something new every day.
Yeah, I think it's like the Aleutian Islands, like that whole series of islands. It is one big giant curve, one big giant arc. Mm-hmm. But if you were to take that latitude and flatten it out, it's pretty close to a straight line.
Hmm.
All that geometry will get you.
Projections.
All right. So
all those cartographers out there.
Yeah. So we had subduction occurring on the west coast of North America, and this subduction raised a chain of volcanoes, and this is what's known as the Nevadan orogeny. And so in geology, we use the term orogeny. That means mountain building event. So this is going to kind of be the, like I said, is like the start of the Sierra Nevada mountains. So we had these volcanoes, and then, but all those volcanoes are all gone now. They've all eroded away. And basically this stuff eroded down into what's known as the Great Valley of California. So this is much later, during the Cenozoic era, within the last, basically several million years ago. When you're getting these volcanics forming, the subduction that causes these volcanoes to form, this was caused by a plate that was getting shoved underneath North America called the Farallon Plate. And so this is a really cool event that happened in geologic history. So the Farallon Plate gets subducted or shoved underneath North America, and the whole entire Farallon Plate is underneath North America. The whole thing's been subducted, and it's still there. Yeah, but it's underneath North America now.
I rest its soul.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite plates.
The Farallon's your favorite.
Farallon, yeah.
Yeah, mine's a dinner plate. Hi-oh!
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Whoo!
Yeah.
Juan de Fuca is also up there.
Yeah, Juan de Fuca is a cool plate. Yeah.
So anyway. I don't really have a favorite plate.
You should think about it.
I mean, the North American plate. We live on the North American plate. The Pacific plate moving pretty fast.
Nazca plate.
Yeah, the Nazca plate.
South America there.
So let's get back.
Why won't you engage with us?
Come on, man.
No, let's just see how many random plates we can name on Earth, right?
Sticking with my dinner plate. Carry on. That one moves pretty fast too. Hi-o!
We should just call it a night.
Right, I have nothing to add to this. I don't even.
So magma formed through subduction.
All right, so you get these subduction zones, and the Farallon plate is getting shoved underneath North America. So
imagine, the way I think about it is like, imagine you're sitting at the bottom of the ocean for 100, 200 million years. You'd be pretty soggy, right? And so the sediments are all soggy and they absorb a lot of CO2. And as that plate is subducting, as it goes deeper into the earth, it heats up. So all of that water and all of those gases get cooked off the sediment. And so that dewatering and degassing goes into the overriding plate. And by adding those volatiles, it lowers the melting point of the rock that's already there. So it's the rock that's already there in the overriding plate that melts. The subducting plate doesn't melt at all.
So that material starts to form these plutons. And so you get these plutons forming within the North American crust at about the figure. Well, this is where the new story is going to come in. It's going to we're looking at the time on how long it takes for these plutons to form. So, but generally speaking, they thought it was a couple million years.
Yeah. What's a pluton?
So a pluton, I always think of a pluton as just like a, it's just a, like a big blob of magma underground. Like it's huge.
So and do you know the difference between a pluton and a batholith?
It's just volume.
I think that's what I thought too. Yeah.
There's a definition. It's a certain volume, okay. Like, but it's just like kind of like a ballpark figure.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was.
Yeah, I feel like we talked about this once before. I think so. 6 years ago.
Pluto is the god of the Greek god of the underworld.
Yeah, I just assume a Pluton was like a someone in a fan club of Pluto.
Should be a planet.
So I think just kind of like a rule of thumb, it's like 100 square kilometers. If your volume is more than 100 square kilometers, that's when they kind of knock it up to Pluton or batholith range.
Not to be a jerk, but square kilometers is an area, not a volume.
Did I say that? Man, I should just retire this one today.
Cubic kilometers would be.
Yeah. So plutons.
The plutons form and actually it's this, what's happening to make up the Sierra Nevadas, it's not just a couple plutons. It's this plutons getting stuck together, and it's this like conglomeration of plutons, which is known as the Sierra Nevada batholith. This thing's huge. I think and this is basically what's going to become, you could kind of say, like the roots of the Sierra Nevada mountains of what they look like today. All right. So that happens. We get the volcanics. All right. But then by the end of the Cretaceous, all of these volcanics they had all worn down. All right. Mother Nature hates mountain ranges. She'll build them, but then she just wants to tear them down. As soon as they come on up, she starts to flatten it down. And just tear it down, mow it down.
She should really think of it. Like, someone should talk to her and be like, why do you do that? Why do you tear down what you build up?
Why do you build me up?
I mean, she really loves, like, I don't know, Kansas. Just nice, flat terrain. Cornfields, grasslands, as far as you can see.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like Nebraska, just corn.
So, all right. So these mountains, these volcanoes, and some would say that it was comparable to like what the Andes Mountains look like today, but it's all since eroded down. Like I said, by the end of the Cretaceous, it was all kind of just like rolling hills. Now, about 20 million years ago, we start to see in North America, we get crustal extension. And so what that means is North America starts pulling apart. And so if you ever look at, like, say, Nevada, the topography of Nevada, you get a lot of these, they call it basin and range, all right? And you get a lot of these linear mountains in a north-south direction and just kind of sticking up. And what that is they form just from the they're blocks of earth that start to rotate and tilt as the earth is being pulled apart. And so that starts to occur about 20 million years ago. And then by about 10 million years ago, the Sierra Nevada mountains start to form like what we see today. So what happens is, and there's a huge, huge crustal block. And this thing's enormous, right? When I say crustal block, I'm not talking like something the size of like a city block or even a city. This thing is like enormous.
Size of a mountain?
Like, yes, it's almost like the size of a mountain.
Well, so, I'm blown away just thinking about the Sierra Nevadas, if you've ever been out that way, if you found yourself in the neighborhood, they're huge. Like, they're big. They're like classic snowy peaks, as the name implies. Mm-hmm. And to think of them being eroded down to foothills and coming back up with a vengeance. Sierra Nevada 2.
Alpha, right. Water,
back the with sequel. A vengeance. Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Can we get Dwayne The Rock Johnson in on this? Because
I would only assume.
Yeah. I mean, his name's The Rock.
Why isn't he a geologist?
Because he makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
And we make nothing.
Hundreds of dollars a
year. Except for our Patreons. Thank you, Patreons.
All right.
So literally tens of dollars a month.
Several dozen.
Several. No, dozen I wouldn't even, wait, several dozen? Are we up?
All right. Let's just, So about 10 million years ago, like I said, this is when the Sierra Nevada mountains that we know of today, they start forming. And so at this point now, the coast range of California had formed. And so these are all the mountains. This is why you have rocky coast or you have mountainous coasts along California. That's what we're talking about. The mountains that butt right up against to the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, you can basically ski down to your surfboard and then start surfing.
Yeah, must be nice.
Yeah.
So we're between the coast range and the basin and range, which is basically pretty much starts in Nevada or so. You get this block now that starts to tilt towards the west. It starts to rotate towards the west. And the rock over towards the basin and range is thinning. And what happens is the area where the Sierra Nevada mountains is more buoyant. And it just kind of floats up. Well, I guess you could say floats. It comes up and that's what caused the uplifting of the Sierra Nevada mountains. And whatever material that was above the Sierra Nevada mountains eroded away. And that's what brings that's how the Sierra Nevada mountains formed.
What's the specific density of granite? Is that like
2.75 grams per cubic centimeter?
Okay. I was going to say it had to be a little more than quartz, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's still fairly buoyant. I mean,
yeah,
for rock.
Yeah. Cause you think about like mantle rock is like 5, but like density of say basalt is 2.93.
Yeah. I thought it was 3, so but yeah. Okay.
So it's just enough to get you up there.
No, but that's all it takes. You know, yeah. you know, if you, all it needs to be is less.
Yeah.
It's going to pop up.
Think about the, you know, the density. You get a glass of water and you put ice in it. Water is 1, ice is 0.92.
It's just that
0.08 difference is enough to float the ice on top. So,
yeah. So like Chris said, floating, it is legit. Yeah. You're kind of, you know, depending upon how you can visualize it, but yes, it's floating up. It's just sticking up.
Pop it up.
And then, so after that gets uplifted, then we have, you know, just more recent geomorphology starts kind of kicking in. What I mean by that is rivers start carving out valleys. We have ice ages. The glaciers start carving out the mountains, and that's that pretty much gets you to where we are today. So what we wanted to talk about today was kind of brings us to our next topic. There's a news story, and this is pretty interesting. And so there's a group from MIT that looked at the Sierra Nevada mountains, and they were looking at how fast does this continental crust form? How fast does the mountains form in the Sierra Nevada mountains? So they what they did was they looked at a section of the Sierra Nevada mountains, and they were just kind of, and it's this really interesting area where it was originally, it started off as this pillar of rock that formed. It was a 40, it's called the Bear Valley Intrusive Suite, right? And this is it formed as almost like this like column coming up, and then over throughout the formation of the mountains, it flipped over like to a side, it flipped horizontally. So what they saw on the surface of the earth was essentially, it's this 40-mile stretch. It extended 40 miles, a length of 40 miles underneath the surface of the earth, but now it's flipped on its side. And so they could just walk along. And essentially, as you're walking along, you kind of, it's like a cross section almost. You're just like walking down into further, deeper into the earth. So they used uranium dating to just take samples along this section that was, like I said, it was kind of flipped horizontally. And they were really surprised by how fast that portion of the Sierra Nevada mountains formed. So they figured that 40-mile, that area that was 40 miles long formed in 1.39 million years. And that's like double. It's twice as fast as what they originally thought that the Earth's crust could form. So that's basically, so the news article here says that it these geologists kind of raised the speed limit for how continental crust can form.
Nice.
I mean, under a million and a half years to build those mountains is insanely fast.
Yeah. So, well, the other thing about the article is they're not saying that the whole mountain range formed that fast.
No.
And they're basically saying just that one little section. And it's probably most likely what happened. It was different sections were forming at different rates, and it's much more complicated than just, you know, the mountains go up and it's at one uniform rate.
Right. And, but so granite, when you look at a piece of granite, not a granite countertop, but an actual piece of granite, you can see the individual grains and the different minerals. And the theory was that in order for it to cool so slowly that you can see those individual minerals and grains, it would have taken a long time for that to cool and differentiate and separate out and all that stuff. So like, for instance, like basalt, it's very fine grain. You can't really pick out per se the individual minerals and stuff. So for this to form, I remember, being taught it takes millions of years for this stuff to cool, but now they're saying, less than 2 million years for all this stuff. That's pretty impressive. I mean, for the mountain building alone, but also just it needs time to cool slowly enough that you can actually see the grains.
Mm-hmm. So in this section that they were looking at, they figured that the volume was that formed in this, like I said, in this 1.39 million years, but 250 cubic kilometers. That's a lot. That's a big chunk of earth right there.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's a lot. So that's
a like cube, the state of Pennsylvania or something.
A cube that's 250 kilometers tall, 250 kilometers wide, and 250 kilometers deep. That's pretty big. That's an enormous chunk of that. Now keep in mind, that's their estimate. It's their estimate on the volume that was there, but, that's a lot of real estate. So, that's kind of the news story that we're looking at. So that's approximately, so if you think of to kind of visualize this, that's bigger than the distance if you had a cube and the length of the cube was from Philadelphia to New York, that's approximately 90 miles. So this would be even further from Philadelphia up into Connecticut. That's just one side of the cube. Now plop a three-dimensional cube on that area right there, and that's a big amount of real estate. I don't know how else to say it.
Us on a journey there, visual journey.
Yeah,
man, that would be one big rock.
Yeah,
I would like
that's to see that's a that lot of rock. Countertops.
I would like to see that rock next to the rock. For I only use the rock as my comparison.
Yeah. How many the rocks is that?
Yeah.
Can you why do we only talk about Dwayne Johnson? What about Sylvester Stallone, the original Rocky?
Or Chris Rock?
Are you kidding me?
There's like three Chris Rocks to every the rock. Yeah. Or Kid Rock?
I do like Rocky. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Are you? Yeah. Come on.
Hey, Rocky.
That was good.
That's right. So that was the news story. So I thought it was I was reading that and I thought it was a really, really fascinating story just about how, you know, obviously we're in the sciences, we're still learning about how the earth works, but just to see a chunk of continental crust form like that in, you know, just a little under 1.4 million years is pretty, pretty impressive. Like, you know, 1.4 million years is nothing compared to the geologic time scale.
No.
Yeah.
It's crazy cool. It's
crazy. I wonder if there'll be implications here on my story about the Alps.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah. Jesse's Corner. Let's get to it.
So this segues this about the Alps. If you're not familiar, they're also a mountain range in
California,
Europe.
Oh, sorry. That was way off.
The California of Europe.
Nobody says that.
No one says that.
I don't know what's happening right now.
So in the Alps, the way people have long thought the Alps formed was you have currently you have the collision of the Adriatic plate from the south with the Eurasian plate from the north. And the thought is that as the Adriatic came in, it sort of hit the Eurasian plate and basically just started bulldozing and thrusting rock up in front of it into these piles that form the mountain. So you have all these thrust faults and whatnot. And the weight of the continental plate during this convergence pushes downward. And so you form this really large, basically what's called a foreland bulge, foreland basin, sorry, to the north of the mountain range. And it's filled up with sediment today. It's the famous Swiss molasse. And you can see that sedimentary basin today. And the thought was that as the mountains piled up, as they grew higher, the basin would sink lower from the loading of the crust. And so the two were sort of linked, that as the mountains got taller, the basin got deeper and filled with more sediment. Until, dun dun dun, that's me being dramatic.
It's good.
Today, the basin still continues to sink, but the mountains are not growing. And so there's some look.
Why is that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. There's some thought that they're not as linked as previously thought. And so there's a new hypothesis out that's sort of backed up by some modeling data and some observational data, as you do in good science. It basically goes like this, that about 60 million years ago, on between the Adriatic and the Eurasian continental plate, there was the Eurasian oceanic plate. So like this edge subducting.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So it was subducting basically under the Adriatic. This is 60 million years ago. And it basically finishes off its subduction, and that leads to the convergence then of the two continents, the Adriatic plate and the Eurasian plate. So you get this continental-continental convergence. And that's about 30 million years ago. During this convergence, there's a decoupling of the upper sort of lighter crustal part of the Eurasian plate from the heavier underlying mantle part of the lithosphere. So the lithosphere is both crustal crust and upper mantle. And so you get this decoupling of the crustal part of the lithosphere from the mantle part of the lithosphere. And that's at about 30 million years ago. And what essentially happens is that this really light, less buoyant part of the crust gets pushed upwards or surges upwards just very easily. And that forms the Alps. And that denser part of the lithospheric mantle that's decoupled, because it's denser and it's just sort of sitting there, just starts sinking further into the mantle. Mm-hmm. And it sort of pulls the adjacent part of the plate with it. So it makes it look like this foreland basin. But one of the lines of, they modeled it and it sort of makes sense. And one of the lines of evidence is that the attitude and the topography of the Alps themselves haven't really changed in 30 million years.
What do you mean? Like when you say like the attitude, you said the attitude of the topography?
They're always super happy.
The attitude. The attitude would be like, I guess the strike and the dip of the.
Okay. That's what I thought you meant. Yeah. Yeah.
So like they're not being affected by this sinking.
No. Mm-hmm. We have field notes from geologists 30 million years ago. Yeah. The strike and dip matches.
Yeah. Dr. Ugg and.
Lucy was out there taking some striking dips.
Dr. Lucy and Dr.
So how do you know by any chance, like how would you know if the angle of dip and things like that have been changing over time?
I don't know off the top of my head. And I don't know.
Probably from alpine glaciation stuff.
Yeah, I'm guessing some geochronology involved or something.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question.
If you do like a large enough study or whatever, you can actually see the subside. Some kind of indicators of subsidence of the.
You can see the
subsidence.
The sedimentary basin subsiding.
Regardless, the Alps are like they're like locked in there, and they're not changing. They're on a really good foundation, is what it sounds like.
This new study is saying, they actually put out a little animated video. I'll send the link along. I'll send the story in the link that shows the two plates colliding. It's pretty cool. But it's sort of one of the big implications here is how seismic events happen in this region. And so there's some seismicity with, this area and with the Alps and so on and so forth. And it was always thought that the seismic zones were sort of linked. And now maybe we should be paying attention more to the subsidence of the basin, sort of putting stresses, mm-hmm. putting strain on these systems and sort of thinking about our seismic models. Wow. And where we would expect earthquakes and whatnot. So pretty cool. The paper came out end of August in Geophysical Research Letters.
We'll have that. I'll have to post that on the website.
That is super cool. That's what I love about science. They'll take something that's been fairly well studied, fairly well documented, and someone would be like, but did they get it right?
What is?
Yeah, right. They'll take another look at it and just, come up with a totally different hypothesis. That's awesome.
Put a new spin on it, get a fresh mind on there, some fresh ideas, this was overlooked, That's why
the title of the paper is called Slab Rollback Orogeny Model, a Test of a Concept. And that's what they're doing. They've got this idea. Yeah, let's test it. Let's see if it works.
Pretty straightforward.
Classic yeah. science.
You can't be too arrogant or people will get mad.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
The Alps and how all these other idiots got it wrong. That was their first title.
Really, people? Is this what we're going with? No, but so I guess the take-home point is that, you know, the geology that's involved in building mountains is really simple, and we get it right the first time always, right?
Yeah, right.
Take-home message.
It's incredibly complicated. Whenever you're dealing with this, you know, whenever you're dealing with the dynamics of two different plates colliding, what's going where, and it's you know, like other mountains are different parts of the mountains are not forming as fast as the other parts are, and it's just
yeah. And both of these cases, it was you know, oceanic plate and then some continental crust and some continental plate, like just super complicated.
Yeah, crazy. We oftentimes when we describe these things or when we illustrate them, you know, we draw these nice sort of models that have very straight lines and everything's smooth, and you see these thrust faults that are smooth and going up, and even the pictures in your textbook show beautiful strata that's straight lines, like finding the best outcrop.
What is this? But, the geology of Bryce Canyon National Park. If you're watching the you've listened to the podcast, you're not seeing this, but I have a postcard. It's just it's got a Zion in here. It's got Bryce Canyon, all these like cool national parks out in
classic
Utah.
Layer cake.
Oh, it's really really easy, really easy, right?
But just you should think of it more as like picture two cars that collide head on, and then see what the front of those cars look like. They're crumpled. There's a lot of, you know, there's all this topography to those surfaces. You make sure everyone's all right first, and then you study the cars.
This is a crash test. There was no humans involved.
Crash test dummies in there, so you know everyone's fine. It's fine.
But in geology, it's the same way. You're not getting these smooth interactions, and so there's a lot of nuance and complications.
Yeah, and then you know people expect you to take those two totally demolished cars and reconstruct it. Like, what was the make, model, and year of each one of those cars? Yeah. And then tell me what color it was.
Tell me what time of day they collided.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What the weather was and who was standing on the sidewalk watching.
Exactly. Back and to the left. No. Sorry.
It's 90s reference right there.
There you go. So it's there's so many moving parts, literally, that it takes a lot of science. It takes a lot of ingenuity.
It's a lot of time. It takes years and years of research. I mean, how long have geologists been studying the Alps? I mean, since the science started, you know, it's
Since Agassiz was there and studying the glaciers, right? Or he was out west. He was from
Andre Agassiz.
That's what I thought he was talking about.
The glacier guy.
Ah.
Lewis, I'm probably saying this last name wrong. No, well, Agassiz.
Yes, I think you are right, Jesse. Yes. Yeah.
He was born in Switzerland, but he did a lot of his work out. Lake Agassiz. Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, the one thing with like some of this stuff, especially like some of this like big picture stuff, is that, I mean, you can go out there, you can go to the outcrops or the mountains in this case or whatever and make all the measurements you want. You know, you're still kind of limited. And it wasn't really until we had this like technological boom, like post World War II, where the field of geophysics really came in. And all of a sudden now we're able to image non-destructively below the surface. And, you know, that's when some of these crazy concepts really started to come about. You know, that's like for example, like the whole, like, you know, plate tectonics.
Yeah.
You know, Alfred Wegener came up with that, and then he proposed continental drift in 1926. But it just seems like he was, you know, he had some, you know, he had a brick wall because the other geologists were saying, okay, you're telling me that the continents are moving around. Okay. All right, smart guy. How heavy does Africa weigh, or how heavy is the Eurasian continent? It's huge. What's the tugboat pulling that thing around? you know, what's the force on Earth that's moving these continents around? These things are huge. He wasn't able to come up with a mechanism, but it wasn't until later on in, was I think the 50s, Harry Hess in the 50s, that's when it all came about. You know, it just, we just had the technology back, later on, several decades later, that we could start figuring out that, hey, these continents are moving around. And, you know, this guy Wegener was right back in the 20s.
Yep.
So just imagine what will be 50 years from now.
We'll have it all figured out.
Yeah, everything will be
done.
Easy peasy.
Be living on Mars. That's it. Yeah, man. So, but no, it's cool. Just sometimes it, you know, I just love when people take these new approaches and using the technology that we have to just, you know, try to learn things from a new spin, you know, from a new angle, I guess you could say.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, that pretty much wraps it up. I think I don't really have anything else. That was, nope. Just wanted to talk about those stories. I had to think
that was a good, exciting mountain filled episode.
Lots of mountains. Well, you know, we were talking, I didn't feel bad. It's our podcast. We'll do whatever we want, but we've been talking a lot about planetary geology for the, you know, we did a couple weeks in a row of planetary geology. So I was just kind of thinking like, let's get back to Earth, you know, yeah. Let's get more down to Earth. Have a down to Earth podcast.
See what I did there? Grounding us.
Love it.
So, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in planetary geology right now. Once again, technology boom, you know, we have the technology now. We can finally start, learning more and more information. I feel like in terms of planetary geology, we're like right now we're in like this renaissance period of learning all about how other planets work and how their moons work and things like that. And you know, we're just limited by technology. Galileo couldn't figure this stuff out because he, you know, he's dealing with the telescope, you know, but now we're sending probes out to these planets and doing some really cool work.
We're really one up in Galileo.
Yeah. Take that, Galileo.
So, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today. Check out the geologyflannelcast.com for every, you know, we post all the links for the news stories that we talked about on the episodes. So we'll have that up on there. You can check us out on Facebook. Check us out. We're Geology Flannelcast on Facebook, at Geoflannelcast on Twitter. I think that's pretty much. Oh, and Patreon. If you'd like to, if you really enjoy the podcast and you'd like to help us out with, we're trying to get upgrade our equipment a little bit. So if you like it, what does Jesse say? It was less than a cup of the cost. You can subscribe for less than the cup of I can't talk today. You can subscribe for less than the cost of a cup of coffee once a month.
Cue the Sarah McLachlan music.
Yeah. Right.
You too could support the Geology Flannel Cast. Yeah. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, formattingformula.com, YouTube.com/C/formattingformula for all your Word document formatting needs. We're up to a bunch of subscribers. We're over 200,000 downloads. So, you know, it's now what it was Tell an Acquaintance September. What are we in October now? Make sure you tell 10 people October.
Make sure you tell. Yes.
October.
But it's the 10th month. So why is it October?
We talked about this last week. All the, everything's all shifted over. Because
they added two more months. Yeah.
I mean, it was
Julius Caesar.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Julius.
Yeah.
What did he ever do?
He gave us some orange juice stand in the mall.
Oh man, they were so good.
And then
Orange Julius, yeah.
He had the salad. I'm sure
Caesar
personally invented that salad.
He did.
I like it.
Wasn't it also a haircut? They called it the Caesar haircut.
Oh yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
That might be a 1990s reference.
Yeah. Cesarean section births.
Oh.
Hmm.
Fun fact.
Did Julius Caesar figure that out himself?
He was the first surgeon who did it, yes.
No, I don't. Maybe that's why Brutus killed him. I don't know.
it comes from that somehow. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Please, please tell 8 friends. Post it on Facebook. Just share it or like it or something. We're always looking for more listeners. Because
why not?
Yeah. Tweet. Tag us on Instagram.
Yeah.
All those things that we're going to get better about doing, but never do.
Yeah, we will at some point.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. We love you guys. And bye.
Bye-bye.